Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is time. Speed round.
That's right, friends. It is Oscar season, and even if we wanted to, and we don't, it is absolutely impossible to give in-depth coverage to every single one of these movies. So what have we done? No, we have not ignored the problem and hoped that it would go away. We've come up with a solution that requires a lot of work on our part and hopefully some entertainment on yours. Christina, what are we going to be doing tonight?
We are going to be doing Speed Round Oscar-nominated Best Picture Edition with Nickel Boys, The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, and Emilia Perez.
There we go. There we go. So these are all movies that we're not doing a full episode on them. And it's worth noting we are doing a full episode on Sing Sing next week. That is, but we've decided to do this because we're going to have it's just a busy week. So there you go. So what we're going to be doing is going to be timing this. It's 10 minutes of coverage. 10 minutes of coverage. So maximum of 3 minutes and 33 seconds for every one of your hosts to chime and opine, which of course can be seated if so warranted and so so chosen. But of course we're going to have a we're going to keep it tight. Toit. We're going to keep it toit on this one.
Tight.
And I think before we move on, Anora has definitely been kind of looks like the one to beat now, which is probably one of the greatest outcomes I think could possibly have come out of what we had before.
Brady Corbett who?
We're not personally taking credit for it, but we're just saying.
It kind of happened after we did our episode, not going to lie.
After we covered it. It's
not the queen's death, but maybe we put it
in. Exactly. So... yeah, I'm very excited to see about that. The votes have been coming in for all the movie night extras for our Academy Awards Will Win and Wanna Win. We've got a good voting base to present when we do our live special for when we have coverage of the Oscars, where you can either watch people talk about nothing on the red carpet or you can listen to us talk about something.
Yeah, and watch y'all glammed up too.
Exactly.
I got to wear a wig for once.
And our friend Lauren Chenard, with a superior interconnection, one can only hope. And new friend Julia Linger are going to be joining us as well. So it should be a lovely time.
Future BFFs. I can feel it.
I feel that is more than likely accurate. Yes.
We're just ramping up the theater kid energy on our.
Strangely, yes. So
I guess we're going in a new direction here.
So Forrest, what are we starting off with?
All right, so starting off with Nickel Boys.
Nickel Boys, all right. So here's the timer.
I don't know how you guys are. I guess I'm just going to pull up my letterbox and see the stuff that I wrote down.
Well, so let's go ahead and let's figure out. We'll take turns going first. How about that? And then I'll start the timer when the first person goes, I guess even if it's me. And then we'll, 3 minutes, 33 seconds. You have to see time, and then we'll do a focus. A pull focus for whoever's speaking first. So who's gonna go first for Nickel Boys?
I feel like Forrest should.
You wanna do it first? Okay. So let's do it. Nickel Boys, time begins now.
So I don't have a lot to say about it. It should definitely come with a fucking trigger warning, this movie, but I was not expecting what it was. But I think it's genuinely fascinating. They shot it like our first person shooter, but rather than being the one that shooting, I mean, you're thrown right into the Jim Crow South as a black person. And, you know, I think it really adds the intimacy of the performances and makes it very uncomfortable. And it's essentially you that's being screamed at or, marginalized or tortured and raped and beat, like all the stuff that happens in this, which I do think that there's elements of kind of trauma porn in it that I don't really know how I feel about, but maybe it's not my place to say. I think that I thought having David Diggs as the adult Elwood was an interesting choice. I don't when they age him up at the end like it's the Irishman or something like that. great performance by Anjali Ellis Taylor, who plays Elwood's grandmother. Hamish Linklater is the villain, as the villainous academy person, right? Like that's running the segregation academy that these kids are in. Segregation disciplinary facility, I guess these kids are in. I did not expect him to be able to pull off that kind of role because he's usually just kind of a nebbish guy in the background or whatever. I don't know, movie that it definitely made me feel some things as someone that got sent to a residential placement. Nothing like, you know, anything being there. And obviously I'm a white guy and this, you know, I got sent in the 2010s and not to a place like this, right? Like it was just kind of more like a boarding school, but like I definitely, there were things in there that I felt like I picked up on, like them thinking about how they would escape if they had to, or like the work detail kit that they make you do, that really, I think popped out to me in a way that it probably wouldn't if I hadn't gone through that experience. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I've seen criticisms of it that I think are somewhat warranted, and a lot of people didn't necessarily like that style, but I did. I liked it, especially in the generation of kind of the video game generation, right? Like the Call of Duty generation, everyone's used to first-person shooter. This is kind of the first-person victim kind of thing, and I thought that was a fascinating way to do that.
Very good. Okay. Yeah. So that's you still got time on the clock, so you can filibuster if you want, or you can cede your time.
No, I'll see my time. That's what I wanted to say about it.
All right. So Christina, you're up next.
Yep.
Tell me about Nickel Boys.
So in recent years, we've heard about the controversy surrounding these reform schools. We've heard Paris Hilton and Paris Jackson and the abuse they suffer under these schools. So I feel like Nickel Boys is a good movie to start off with, because we haven't seen that many movies about these types of schools. They parade themselves as like good, simple reform schools for troubled youth, when really they're abusive mentally, physically, psychologically, emotionally, sexually even. It's pure trauma, very traumatizing for those who attend. And I'm glad that this movie is out, because it does show like, wow, this is actually a really big issue that people like Paris Hilton and Paris Jackson are bringing up. And I thought, you know, this is based on a true story. It's based on a true story. You know, the what's the name of the school called again? Oh shit. What's the name of the school? I think it's based on the Dozier School for Boys.
Yeah, start with a D, yeah.
Yeah, start with the, yeah, and it's very true. Fuck, Lois is crazy loud. Oh well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the clock needs to get turned down a tiny bit. Okay.
Yeah. But I'm sad that this movie's not getting enough recognition, because it's really good, but it is very triggering and a lot to handle. And I honestly feel like it really should have had its time to shine. But thanks to us,
thank you,
we're giving it a moment to shine.
Yeah.
And
I think we solved racism by giving it a
by giving it 10 minutes to be discussed.
We're doing DEI right now on this show. But yeah, highly recommend it. If you're someone who has suffered under being like in reform schools or whatever, I feel like, you know, this is very triggering. Maybe a good, like, you know, watch to, you know, as a way to cope, heal from your experience, perhaps. And yeah, that's all I have to say, pretty much.
All right, there you go, Christina, Nickel Boys. Okay, so that'd be your old pal Neutron over here. Yeah, I thought this was a very deeply impressive and unique film. Forrest, you mentioned the foreign perspective, the first person point of view. Huge swing, just for that alone. And I think that is being mentioned when people talk about this movie. But is it really being mentioned? This is a directorial debut, which is incredibly impressive to me. Like, to have this as your first movie.
Yeah, the guy's other two movies are documentary shorts.
Right. So I think, you know, as mentioned, the story itself is absolutely devastating. I think it's presented in a very deeply beautiful visual manner. I don't think anybody, you alluded to it, but it's a non-linear storytelling setup. So it kind of jumps around a little bit, but it doesn't do so in such a way that's obnoxious or hard to follow necessarily. It does take a little getting used to, but the visuals are very deeply beautiful for something so sad and so traumatic. Yeah, as mentioned, it's based on a book. So unfortunately, this is like real life events and real life horrors. I think it's very bold and brave, and there's a lot of captivating performances. The woman who plays the mother, I thought she was like really good and kind of just a great supporting role for that, and that was really good as well. At the heart of it's a historical drama about, you know, blatant corruption and like the Jim Crow South and abuse in this reform school, so it's not exactly a laugh riot, if you will.
Yeah.
But, that's, you know, it's a struggle of living in a racist America and finding joy when you're given an unfair lot. I think that's a very timeless story. There's a lot of really amazing shot compositions. And also shout out to the cinematographer who also, I don't think it's his first movie, but I think he's still pretty early on in his career, because I was very blown away by a lot of what I was seeing from a visual perspective. And I think that that's works very well in conjunction. I was surprised by how unique it felt. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, it was, I think it was ambitious and rewarding. I wouldn't say it's perfect, but for a debut film, good Lord, amazing. And very important, highly poetic piece of art that I was engaged with for the whole time. And I wish more people could see it. It feels like the release kind of got enough of a push right in time to get it nominated for Best Picture. There was definitely a push by certain outlets to get in front of people. I just, with this kind of thing, it bums me out that average human beings can't just see it more easily. And I understand that's how the game's played. And I know why. I just don't like it, nor do I respect it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think it really, it hits especially differently at a time when, you know, this actual reform school is in Florida, and we have like the whole Ron DeSantis, you know, pretty much trying to erase history completely in Florida, right? Like,
right.
That style of curriculum, like far right, you know, revisionist curriculum. And this story, because it is based on a real academy, not the book is a novelization of stories that Colton Whitehead, I guess, I believe that's his name, you know, found, Colson Whitehead, found from this academy. And I think that, you know, it's brutal and it's sad, but it's, I don't know, it's effective. It's affecting in doing what it wants you to do. And I think at a time of like limited empathy that people are really displaying on a constant basis, it's a swing, because it puts you right into, you know, you can't escape from the fact that essentially it feels like you're Elwood Curtis.
Like, it feels like it's happening to you. Yeah, and that's that whole first person thing. And that's when we talk about the empathy engine of movies and the ability to make you feel things even for situations you're not personally involved with. I think that's in a brave storytelling device to do it that way. Some people flat out said that they would have liked it better if it just been shot more like a traditional movie. But I don't know. Like, I think that it's very, very cool and very interesting and really bold to have it as a debut feature. Really, I mean, it's sort of like that. You see people that, you know, people will go to their movies no matter what, and they play it safe every time, no names mentioned. And that's not at all what this is. And I think if you're remotely interested in film as a art form, then I think you owe it to yourself to at least check out Nickel Boys and just gear yourself up for the fact that it's very sad.
By the way, the real, well, I guess they changed it to the Florida School for Boys, but the Arthur G. Dozier School for Boys, not shut down until 2011.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a harsh toke, right?
Yeah, that is rough business. So there you go, folks. Nickel Boys, that's our take. And with 5 seconds to spare. All right, what do we got next?
Complete Unknown.
Complete Unknown. Complete Unknown, kid. All right. Who's starting off on this one? All right. Christina is going first. Mm-hmm. Starting the timer. Wait, I got to put on the view first before we do it. Okay, there we go. Starting the timer. Now.
All right. So I saw A Complete Unknown after I saw Nosferatu. So it was like a complete Nosferatu situation. And I thought it was okay. Like most biopics, when the person's alive, they have control and approval over what gets shown and what doesn't get shown. And Bob Dylan always wants to remain this mysterious figure in our history. He rarely gets interviews. He rarely, you know, talks to the public. He just does his concerts where people walk out because they can't stand the sound of his voice anymore. But Timothée, friend of the stream, did a really good job in doing what Austin Butler could not do with Elvis. He doesn't sound like Bob Dylan right now, even though he's been done filming for God knows how long. Apparently, Timothy was studying Bob Dylan since he was 21 years old when he was first offered the role. So he had 5 years to prep. And I think, if anything, his performance and also Edward Norton as Pete Seeger, they're the standout performances of this movie. And that's basically all the good I have to say about it. You know, Timothy's singing is phenomenal. He does a really good job. He learned how to play harmonica and guitar. Great job. Monica Barbaro, who's now dating Andrew Garfield, did a really great Joan Baez, as always, like Joan Baez. She's, you know, a legend, but the only problem is she's always tied to Bob Dylan when it comes to her history, yet she's more than just Bob Dylan's fling. Because this has a Christmas release, people still think this is going to win Best Picture and that Timothée might actually win Best Actor. So Christmas release days always determine Academy Award winners, apparently, still. So that's all I have to say.
All right. So I guess that'd be me, that I'm up now. Okay, so this is better than I thought it was going to be, but my expectations for it were pretty much in the sub basement. I don't think the musical biopic should exist. I think it's creatively bankrupt as a genre, and I think they're actually hurtful towards both cinema and culture. I also don't understand how you make a straight-up biopic like this after Walk Hard has been made. And the fact that Mangold, it doesn't seem like a bad guy at all, has managed to do this and doesn't seem to get why people might feel that way and just says, oh, it's people being cynical. Like, no, the movies are cynical. They're designed in such a way to be awards delivery systems. And the whole thing, I think it came into with the best of intentions. I don't think it's a bad movie, but I just these movies shouldn't exist. Pete Seeger, Norton's great. He's great in it. I think the performances are all good. Music is such an important part of my identity and who I am. Like, I work on it every day, whether I'm actively playing or recording or not. And I just don't feel ever represented by these kinds of films, and this one is no different. The fact that it's based off of an artist who's a notorious liar and serial exaggerator, and the book that it's based off of, he flat out has said he made large swaths of it up, is kind of astounding to me. And that goes to some of Forrest's points about involving living people and making like a biopic. Joan Baez is a fully rounded human being and great artist in her own right, who has never been anything else other than asterisks under Bob Dylan's stardom. And this, unfortunately, doesn't even do anything to solve that. It completely reinforces that. I think that's a shame. If this wins for Best Picture, that is the most cynical and reactionary thing that could happen. And I'm not saying that because it's a bad movie. I'm just saying because it's like designed in a lab to win Best Picture. And, you know, I actually don't think almost any of them are bad for the Best Picture nominees. So you could do worse, but you could also do better. And I do hope that that's what's happening. Again, is Timothée good in it? Yeah, he's shown he's got the goods. I would prefer him to be nominated for Dune, frankly, because I think he's doing better work in there. But, I don't know. Musical biopics shouldn't exist, and that's a hill I'm willing to die on. It's enough with these biopics. It's enough, really. So, Forrest, over to you.
Yeah, I don't know. I found this insanely frustrating, and I really kind of fucking hated it. I feel like the Electric Dylan controversy is something you could handle with, you know, you'd have to get into the politics of it. And this movie was devoid of all politics, right? Like, even civil rights was out of it. They called it now social justice, which, you know, is like the Wells Fargo version of any kind of racial policy. But the split between Pete Seeger and Bob Dylan paints Pete Seeger as like kind of this villainous Machiavellian figure, which he was not. And he saw folk music as a way to change the politics of the world and to bring people into this political mold. And Dylan just didn't want to do that. He wanted to be an artist, or like, you know, he wanted to do rock. He wanted to do all these things. He didn't have an interest in the politics. When things started to get really dicey with Vietnam is when this movie is really covering. And both Pete Seeger and Bob Dylan have been very vague about and cagey about this moment in time. So I understand like just taking their words for it, which Dylan's a fucking liar. but like just taking their word for it, I can understand is, you know, is would lead you to that conclusion with the politics sanitized from it. But Pete Seeger was a communist, and he was one that was very brave and banned from even the airwaves, you know, for the most part after this period of time. And Dylan walked away from, you know, both his relationship with Joan Baez, who was another person fearless throughout her career, even when it pissed people off, like Jane Fonda on the left, who I have a lot of respect for. Like, she had a point of view, and Dylan just didn't seem interested in having that political point of view, despite the fact that his songs at this time were inherently political. So I think that it's a lot deeper than Dylan just kind of selling out, but I think those things are not tackled. I thought Monica Barbaro, I think, who played Joan Baez, did it really well, but they made it seem like they just kind of hooked up a couple times when Dylan and Joan Baez had a deep relationship, and then she was actually pushing him into doing the politics of it because she was an avowed leftist at the time, and I think still is. And none of that is covered. You just think that Seeger was like a weird nebbish freak that really liked the integrity of acoustic music, and there was
liked obscurity. Yeah.
Yeah. And he wasn't someone who was trying to use this to stop what he saw as like a imperialist unjust war and getting, you know, trounced for it. And you come away from that not knowing any of that based on this movie. I think Edward Norton did an amazing job playing Pete Seeger. But like, there's stuff that just didn't happen. Like Pete Seeger did not try to turn on, like at the end, there wasn't like this villainous moment where he's like, I can't take it, I'm going to shut down, you know, the music. And in fact, in his, you know, mind, and I think that he's a very honest person for, you know, I mean, whatever people want to say about him, I have a lot of respect for him. He's one of my favorite musical artists of all time. I met him once before he passed away in his 90s because I went to the Clearwater Music Festival. In 2009, I think. But so I have a lot of, I'm a big defender of Pete Seeger. He cleaned up the Hudson River here. He, you know, constantly we'd have people from Clearwater come and do assemblies at school every year, my entire time I was growing up. So I have a lot of love for Pete Seeger, a lot of love for his legacy. And I think this film just makes it seem, you know, with a pitch perfect impression of him, don't get me wrong, like it doesn't get to the root of what this fight was about. And because of that, the movie suffers. It also just kind of relegates Joan Baez, like, you know, like a one dimensional, but very sexy figure in Bob Dylan's life, and not like, you know, a fundamental relationship in the beginning of his career. And it makes it seem like, you know, I don't really even understand, like, it was captured on like one of the first, you know, the D.A. Pennybaker movie. One of the iconic images is Dylan and Joan Baez together, and they had a tumultuous relationship, and he treated her like shit, I think, but at the time, you know. But he's also young, he's this contrarian figure. I didn't all of that stuff made me just not, it's a sanitized non-political movie, and I feel like it just ruined the story for me because of that. And I don't think movies need to be perfectly, you know, in the story, but like the movie doesn't make any sense to me until like I had to go read like even more stuff about like this moment in time to like really get, you know, up on the factional infighting. It wasn't even just Dylan, like, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary, who Peter Yarrow just passed away a few,
I love him.
But like he like they stepped away from the fight against the Vietnam War because they felt like, they felt like it messed with their civil rights movement stuff. Also, his dad was like a CIA person, but I think that like none of that is covered in this movie, and I think the movie suffers for it. And
there we go. Three. That's my time, Jack.
We need a Peter, Paul, and Mary movie.
Yeah. You know, that'd be good. I'd
play Mary. I could seem like her.
Except the fact that, again, musical biopic shouldn't exist. It's too much. We don't deserve them anymore.
Also, like
for every good one, there's 30 bad ones. So
I don't know how you do the whole Peter Yarrow pedophile
girl thing.
But you know, he actually went and helped girls in Israel, and they gave him an award. They're like, you really, Pete Delgado really, really cares about young women. And it's like, that makes it serious. That makes your situation worse.
Time expired. All right. So we're doing, I guess I'm going next. And starting with the Brutalist, right? I think that's what we're doing here. Okay. So let's start the clock. The Brutalist. All right. So this is kind of two movies in one for me. I really like the first one, the first half of it. That was amongst the best films that I've seen the past year. And the second half takes some really bold swings, most of which do not connect in any way, shape, or form. I think what works best here is an immigrant story. And so it's one we've seen, but with some derivations on. And the difference here is that the immigrant in question isn't just a Hungarian Jewish Holocaust survivor. He's actually a fantastic artist. And in this case, it's an architect, right? And we've seen this a lot with practical arts. You know, somebody's a doctor in their home country and a janitor in this one, right? And things like that. But we strangely have a weird relationship with the depicting the relationship between the art and artists that isn't just a narrative about that specifically. So in that, I think this does that very well while also doing many other things. I think it's a story of pretty extreme class distinction and normalized low-grade racial animus and the patron and artist relationship. So the power dynamic between Guy Pearce, who plays Harrison Lee Van Buren, and Laszlo Thoth, played by Adrian Brody, is excellent here. I think, you know, he requires money to achieve his vision, and the thing that the artless Van Buren does not and will never have is the ability to create. And he's not an artist or creative. He never will be. And his innate contempt for Toth as a driver for the movie. And so there's like this friendship, working relationship, symbiosis, frenemy situation that develops there. And I feel like I'm almost short selling the first half of this movie, which I said all works very deftly for me and efficiently. And yeah, it worked for me. And I was very, very engaged with the story. I was very down with it. Then as Toth enters the hallowed halls of the rich benefactor, we see hope for him getting his family over. And that's when we get an intermission. And that's when you should probably just leave. But it's, you know, it's a perfect time to consider, to contemplate things along those lines. And I think that that's Corbet did a great job with that. And I think I'm glad that it's there. But all of that, all the actual building, the drawing, the architecture stuff, yes, please. I love that VistaVision awesomeness, you know, the big screen totally made my heart swell. I love that part of it. The Italy stuff where they're trying to find the marble, the rock. It's a bit of a side quest. Is it strictly necessary? No, not really. But then there's the rape scene. Sexual assault warning. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's jarring. I didn't like any part of it. And it's a weird jump in logic that only has a C-grade explanation for why it happens. And then it only gets worse. There's a Festin style confrontation by Felicity Jones, works on a plot beat level, but it's bad. And to put it bluntly, in this 215-minute movie, we just never find out what happened with Van Buren. He just took off and headed back to his home planet? Like, what exactly is going on here? And then the epilogue with the turnaround of the phrase that it isn't the journey, it's the destination. Okay. Annoying. And it's like, I get it. It's about art, and it's about you making this art specifically. So anyway, that's my time. Forrest, you're next.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel I don't want to weigh in too much on it, because I found the rape scene so viscerally upsetting that it fucked with like my next few days. Like, I just had like low grade depression after watching it. I don't know. I'm not someone that gets triggered usually by it. I mean, maybe I'm secretly a misogynist and I'm like, oh, women getting raped in movies, you know, I can make it through. Oh, but a guy getting raped in this movie, that's where I draw the line. No, but I just found that in a movie that doesn't really give you a lot to, like, I do, like, looking at my notes that I wrote down, like, I do agree with you. I think that there was a very interesting premise created in the first half of it that I would have loved to see them do a different way. But it's a pretty brutal and miserable 3.5 hours. And, you know, I started off liking it. I started off feeling like, you know, I really like when he meets, when Laszlo Toth meets, you know, the Guy Pearce Van Buren character. I like that dynamic between them. I like seeing, seeing his immigrant story and how he was kind of down on his luck and things improved for him. And, you know, he's this great, very visionary architect, even though you never see that really portrayed on screen. He just does a lot of heroin. But, you know, he's an architect with a heroin addiction, and it's like because of what he went through in the Holocaust, and it's deeply sad. But then I feel like it goes and goes and goes, and especially after that second intermission, it just was a constant barrage of misery. And it, even more baffling to me after finding out that Brady Corbet and his partner, who's I believe she's Swedish, Mona Fastwold, neither of them are Jewish, and the movie seemed like it was trying to say something about it worked when they were talking about the immigrant experience, the Jewish experience. I was left kind of confused about what they were even trying to say about Judaism and any point that they kind of went down on. I think about a movie like A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie, that I think does have a lot to say about things that I'm not really connected to as someone that didn't grow up Jewish and isn't really grappling with those things. And I felt like at the end of that movie, I understood something about the Jewish experience more. At this, I'm just kind of left baffled and confused and kind of miserable. And the rape scene was kind of like the cherry on top of me just feeling like, I don't know. I feel like I got raped for the movie. But Christina.
All right. Just in time. That's your time.
Yeah. All right. If I had a nickel for every time Adrian Brody played a Holocaust survivor and got nominated and potentially win an Oscar, I have two nickels. It's kind of weird, but, you know, it kind of makes sense. Again, I felt raped by this movie. I mean, the first half was pretty good. The second half, I was like, oh, okay. To me, Guy Pearce shines more than Adrian Brody does, because I'm a huge Guy Pearce fan. Not so much with Adrian Brody. I mean, I remember him from that one Fiona Apple music video, but that's about it. And that one season, Peaky Blinders. But yeah, again, I don't really understand what the point of the movie was, like when it came to like the message regarding Judaism, you know? And I mean, as someone who's fine with long movies, the fact that this got an intermission and we couldn't do Wicked Part 2 after Defying Gravity with an intermission pisses me off. Okay, like, come on now.
I don't think that's the only reason why, but
yeah. I mean, but still. I'm not really, again, the first half was pretty good. Like, that's like, okay, but then it does not end there. You know, at least this movie does have an intermission. But I do think that the rape scene was very triggering, and I did not like it at all. I don't understand why it was there. It was just put there probably for shock value. And I'm kind of hoping Andrew Brody does not win the Oscar for this, because he already won for The Pianist. So, like, we're good. We're good with Holocaust surviving Oscar wins.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
I'll close this out then. Look, it's a bit heavy-handed. You know, the ending, we get it. You make films. You know, it's about the artist and the patron should shut the hell up and write the checks. Okay. But then why put this other distracting stuff in there? You know, I get it that architecture isn't like some of the other arts. It requires massive investment of capital to exist, just like making movies. But leaving on something so heavy-handed like what it did was kind of demeaning to the earned stakes of the first part. And also, it was a mad rush to the end for this very, very long movie, which is just weird. I think that that's all very valid criticism, but I don't really hear anyone else making, even though I do agree. Some in the chat, you know, says it's about art, not Judaism. I agree. Well, then if you don't want it to be an analog for the state of Israel, then don't put like these. For so much of the story that is very patient and very methodical for what you're trying to do, don't leave it open to that kind of interpretation if you don't think that way. So I think it's weird. I didn't like it as much as I thought I would. I definitely liked it more than anyone else on the show, but I think it's got a lot of asterisks, and I'm kind of glad it's the luster is a little bit off of the shine on this one, because I don't think it's the best picture at all. And I think it could have been. And ironically, I think it could have been with some editing. But, you know, I get the whole point of, hey, we're never going to show you the building. Like, the guy is not insufferable. Insufferable would be too much, but he's definitely pretty precious about things. And for a while in interviews, he's coming off like a real git. So.
Yeah,
that's why Sean Baker's coming in strong.
Sean Baker coming in strong.
I mean, I'll repeat this line that I said, and I felt very witty when I said it. But you know, the line at the end, it's not about the journey, it's the destination. Well, why the fuck did I have to sit through a 3.5 hour movie of all journey then?
Uh-huh.
You're going to end on that.
And if you don't think that you're going to open yourself up to that kind of criticism by ending with that line, boy, you're not nearly as smart as you think you are, buddy.
Yeah. I'm definitely a big Guy Pearce fan. I found it interesting that this week he came out as a victim of Kevin Spacey's, you know, constant barrage of harassment and assault.
And Kevin Spacey's like, well, why did you come to my house afterwards? And I'm like, dude.
And as well as other younger, because I mean, I was on the set of L.A. Confidential, which, I mean, they make great art. I'll just say that. But, you know,
most of these victims are dead.
Well, all of the young men on the set of L.A. Confidential, really, I think that was a peak Kevin Spacey. And just after hearing that story, kind of or reading that story, it's kind of interesting. Is there some kind of, you know, taking back your power and being the, at least in this movie, right? Like playing the rapist, the patron, the more powerful person that, I mean, maybe that's reading too much into it, but it's interesting that he comes out that after, you know, after like 20 years, you know, for good reason, right? Because everyone else is dead and he feels like, all right, well, this story is going, like the story seems to be, Kevin Spacey never did anything really wrong. Like he came out and said, no, here's what happened to me and I didn't want to necessarily talk about this. And it's interesting that that's the same time where he does this role, right? Like he's doing press for this role and talking about that.
Can I just say, we did that segment in just the right amount of time, and then there was an intermission, and we took it somewhere else entirely and went too long.
No, I don't know. I just felt like that's something that I wanted to.
No, it's all worthwhile stuff, but I think that's kind of funny that like we went too long in the movie that's too long. That's great.
Yeah, I feel like I just my visceral reaction to that scene, right? Like the context of that coming now, like from someone that was. I mean, I think his performance is completely effective, which is why that scene is so triggering, right? Like if he was just like, you know, if he was doing something else with it. And then it wasn't effective. And then he just was like, and I raped him. And then he'd be like, all right, well, I don't care. I think it is how chilling and like, you know, how powerful this character is and how well he's portrayed by Guy Pearce that makes it completely triggering.
Yes, 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 yes.
Which, by the way, it was asked in the chat. And of course, we don't, you know, we're not looking at the chat, but because we're doing.
We're doing this segment. We're doing this bit. Yeah. But yeah, get your counters ready is all I got to say, folks.
Yeah. Well, somebody was asked in the chat, what's the movie with the Spanish trans woman?
Exactly. Oh, well,
that one.
Amelia Perez. Yeah.
So the clock starts now. Forrest, you're starting?
I mean, there's just so fucking
I'll go weird. First.
All right, you can go first.
Okay, Christina can go first. Christina, time begins now.
So Conan was the one who was like, hey, you got to watch this movie. There's a lot going on here. And I'm like, okay, it's a musical. Cool. I love musicals, right? You know me, I love musicals. There's hardly a musical that I hate. I hated this one, though.
He was Clockwork Oranging you.
What?
He was Clockwork Oranging you into hating musicals.
I know, exactly.
I specifically, in my defense, since my name was invoked, reclaiming my time, I want to say, I need someone else to see this is how I characterized it. I wasn't like I said, like, hey, watch this awesome movie.
Yeah,
I was
no,
like,
I know.
Need someone else to see this. So yeah. To be clear, that's what I said.
Right, let's start the clock over again because you know we both transgressed onto Christina's okay. Time.
All right, yes. Time resets. Let's go.
Sexism. You saw it here first, chat.
Time resets. Hit it.
Yay. So yeah, this is a musical that I absolutely despise.
What's the name of the musical, Christina?
Amelia Perez.
Let's see if we get to 150.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Amelia Perez is one of those films that's doing a lot, and it, in my opinion, plays on the worst tropes of Mexicans and trans people. When it comes to the character of Amelia Perez, she's using her identity as like a shield to protect herself with the old trans trope of like, I transition because I want to hide from my past, which is a transphobic trope that's very, very problematic. And I cannot believe we're still using that trope to this day. Also, it's from a French director who knows nothing about Mexico or anything about it. It just looks like a conservative ad for like being anti-Mexican. Carla Sofia Gascon, great and all that, but again, she's if you're a minority group that Carla Sofia Gascon hasn't insulted, stay in line because you'll be up next. And I mean, Zoe Saldana is great. The songs are terrible. I mean, why there's a song called La Vaginoplastia? Like, come on now. The songs are just not good. The singing is very like stiff and bland. Editing is just a bit much. I just don't get how some people, like good directors, are like, yeah, this is a great movie. And I'm like, yeah. And yeah, she did say something about Selena Gomez not being fully Hispanic and talking shit about Selena Gomez, her own co-star. So that was crazy. Yeah. So I honestly, I'm like, I just did not like this movie. And I mean,
what movie was that? What was the name of the
movie? Amelia Perez. Very, very many people agree, though. A lot of people say this is probably the worst representation of trans people and Mexicans in recent history. And I'm glad that this film is being ripped and analyzed.
The Trump administration is.
Yeah. Anyway, don't watch this movie. If you can stomach it, okay, fine. Good for you. If you liked it, I don't know what's wrong with you. But yeah, I yield my time. I'm good.
All right, there you go.
Mr. Speaker, I yield my time.
All right, so it's your old friend Neutron again.
You were invoked.
I was invoked. The movie Amelia Perez, of course, is what we're talking about. The movie Amelia Perez.
What was that movie again?
Amelia Perez. Also Amelia Perez. And I saw this not as early, like film festival early, but earlier on than some. And my first reaction to it, I was flabbergasted. So I did not hate it, at least at first, and definitely not how I expected to. But it was overstuffed, strange, and almost none of it really works. And so what I said was, it was Green Book but trans. Mm-hmm. And what happens if you put Mrs. Doubtfire in a blender with Crash 2004?
And Robin Williams in the blender now.
But there are things that about it that I did compare to the movie Annette, the Leo Carrack movie with Sparks. That's a far superior movie, and is very interesting in the musical aspects as far as just the songwriting, how things reacted, how it reacted with what was happening on the screen, and so on and so on. It's Annette is like the movie that Amelia Perez would want to be, and a far superior musical, one of the more interesting.
It's like, musicals. Comes off like the Danish Girl.
So I think it's shocking that the Academy types, or at least were all about the movie. And it really didn't hit me until I thought about the whole Crash 2004 thing, that some of them were like, oh, this will sort out that whole trans thing. Like, which in a year that both People's Joker and I Saw the TV Glow came out. So how insulting is that? I think this movie takes some huge swings and mostly huge misses, sometimes in the same 10 minute period. And when I say miss, I don't mean like just a bit outside. I'm talking about golf clubs at a baseball game, like that kind of miss. And I genuinely don't understand why they decided to make this a musical, other than some filmmakers seem so besought by them right now. I guess it was an opera or something. I mean, I don't care. I don't give a shit. Still my time too, by the way. So I think some of the songs are better than others. That's in the movie, which of course is Amelia Perez. Some songs are better than others. Yes, 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 yes. And I think everybody can agree with that. From penis to vagina is wow. That is something. It's hard to tell if it's guileless or in on the joke sometimes. But here's what's crazy: is all of it's absolutely swimming in self-importance, swimming in it. And
this movie called.
So, Amelia Perez is what we're talking about. If somebody asks, you must answer. So, but I will say that the line that the songs are not memorable, I don't agree with that. I think they're very memorable, just not for the right reasons. But I also, I'm a musician. I think about music very differently than a lot of people. I think it hits different than 95% of modern musicals, which are usually not to my specific taste and sensibility. But I think there's only one that's like really good, and that's El Mall, which is the one that's nominated. And I think that as a sequence aside outside of this movie, I think it works very well. I also think there's like a solid season's worth of streaming TV story in this movie, which of course is Emilia Perez. Mm-hmm. There's too much story. But that said, Zoe Saldana is a powerhouse, and I think it's a treat seeing her play someone that's not a green or blue person. And I think her being relatively innocent in this, I think helps a lot with it. So I like it, you know, mostly not. The further I get away from it, the less I liked it. I think it's wildly reductive of the trans experience. The Mexico it takes place in seems straight off conservative attack ads. It's the most befuddling, quote-unquote, mainstream movie I've seen in a long time. It's a flabbergasting huge swing, and it's a miss. And that's my time. Emilia Perez, everybody. Emilia Perez.
Yeah, so jumping on your last point about this, right, I thought it was pretty... funny in like a strange, grotesque way that the same year that they ran the Kamala Harris supports giving illegal immigrants transgender surgeries in prison attack ads, like constantly they barraged red states with it, Emilia Perez mm-hmm. came out, like a movie that basically is that. I don't know. It's really fucking hard to sum everything up because there's way too much going on in this movie. I've had from penis to vagina stuck in my
head. It's memorable, right? It's very memorable. People
I never said it wasn't.
Very memorable song from Emilia Perez.
It kind of sucks that, you know, El Mall, which I agree with you now that I've watched just that separate from the on purpose, separate from the actual movie, right? Like I thought that's actually a really good sequence. Reminds me of something in Chicago or something, right? Like kind of, I thought that was very strong. The Selena Gomez performance, she's the only one, you know, that can really, really sing. I mean, you know, I think that in El Mall, it's good because they kind of rap it or whatever, but like, it's crazy Selena Gomez is in this, by the way. It's fucking insane. It's just, this movie does not need to exist. It's like, you know, it's even more so than biopics. I don't know what they were trying to achieve by it. I guess tell a story that, you know, like gives you a trans character that, you know, breaks bad. Or I don't know. But I don't even think they gave you a real, you know, look into her getting redeemed. And I think that was supposed to be the point, that she's getting redeemed by starting up like this thing where they dig up the bodies of people that literally fucking Emilia Perez killed. Like, you know, when she was, I forget what her gangster name was, but I just feel like it gives you a very warped and racist depiction of Mexico. Which, I mean, a lot of things do, right? Like, Sicario, I mean, even, like, I love Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, but, like, every time we really see Mexico depicted in these stories, it makes it seem like it's this, you know, brutal, but which some of it is, don't get me wrong, but, like, it makes it seem like that's all of what's happening in Mexico, and this kind of almost cartoonifies that, and I don't think that, like, it's both racist and bad for that. The trans story, it just feels so kind of facile, and, like, the fact that the doctor gets won over by her is like an Israeli doctor. I mean, that kind of added to another, like, oh, cool. You mean, and he sings in his fucking Israeli warble where he's like, you know, and I was reading somebody panning it, and I think I agree with it. They said,
maybe Zion is a woke.
The closest, well, I think American liberals tried to do that. the point, like, they were like, I was really searching for a point. I think this is a Vox article that I was reading, and they were like, you know, the closest thing it gets to is changing the body, changing society. Changes society, changing the body changes the soul. Changing the body changes society. Then changing the body changes it all, and that's the closest they ever get to anything. But like, it doesn't really, right? Like, it's still the most racist depiction of Mexico, and everyone's getting, you know, brutally blown away for these fucking drug lords. That one of them transitioned. Cool. Now we have a trans former drug dealer. Like,
what was the character's name?
Emilia Perez. I said it three times, and then Carla.
He's going to appear and do a racial slur.
Yeah.
And sing from Emilia Perez.
So just
Emilia
just
Perez, everybody.
It's a baffling fucking movie. Like, and in a different way than something like, I think, to me, The Brutalist was baffling. Like, you know, I'd watch The Brutalist 10 times before I'd watch Emilia Perez again.
There you go. Speed round complete.
I think that it's hilarious that the tweets are, you know, some of the big tweets that brought, I mean, who hasn't she tweeted about, but like
George Floyd, right?
On George Floyd. She lives in Spain. Who told her about George Floyd?
Well, yeah, Emilia Perez should not have opinions on George Floyd.
The thing of Carla Sofia Gascon from Emilia Perez is that she grew up as when she was a man in a very conservative household. And so, like Caitlyn Jenner, those very bigoted, non-progressive views that are very conservative spilled into her when she transitioned as well, which is a thing that happens with certain demographics or age of trans women.
Can you believe that Emilia Perez is the second most nominated movie of all time? And a very likely scenario is that it will come away with one, maybe two awards. I think he's always going to come out on top on this one. And
Emilia Perez cannot do what Oppenheimer did.
When Zoe comes out on top, you know what she says?
Yes, 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 yes.
Dude, that sequence, though, like.
Yes, 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 yes.
That entire fucking sequence, right? It was like they're like man to woman to man to woman, from penis to vagina, and then they
got yeah, we did it, we did it, everybody. This is the secret
even make,
goal.
Even make the like the whatever like Singaporean doc and be like, I see, I see, I see, and it's like just everything about that sequence. Even just the women going around in circles and you singing. Vaginoplasty. The whole thing is just so baffling and weird and off, and not in like an artsy "this is kind of fun" way, but just in like a
who was the audience for this?
Yeah,
who like
Denis was
that's
the one.
Like that, and that's the thing that I kept, and so you can't imagine having watched this and like thinking, all right, I'm gonna dislike this, but thinking I was gonna dislike it for very different reasons, and they'd be like, what just happened? And that's why I was like, I need someone else to see this, because like,
yeah,
I feel like if we had done an episode on it, and I'm glad we didn't, and of course we, by the time it all got the nominations or whatever, it's like, no, it has to be stopped is what we were thinking.
Yeah,
but it would not be boring conversation, because you could spend like 2 hours talking about any 30 minutes of that movie.
We would be on the Emilia Perez hate train. We would get so many views like other video essays have done on Emilia Perez.
Well, and that's
on what?
Emilia Perez. But I think
who?
And I think it, the thing is, I think it could be good, because most of the critiques that we've been lobbying are not things that like at least the Academy were hearing for a very long time. So it's crazy, because it's going back to Conclave, right? It's like the worst dude in the world is like being disqualified, but for the wrong reasons. Where it's like, well, it sucks that this movie, which is like a hollow Potemkin village of a movie that just flailing around in its self-importance and really doesn't even know what it is the second most nominated movie of all time. Literally, because they thought that Emilia Perez was going to like solve the trans problem, like Crash 2004 did.
Or Green
that's
Book.
Why.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Green Book. But like, that's why. It's not because they thought it was a really great movie. You know, it's screwed up that like, I'm all for big swings. I really am. Like, I love to see it. Actually, maybe big swings are overrated. Let's just dial it back a little, people.
Yeah.
And I saw someone in the chat, and it was at least 30 Emilia Perez's ago, mentioning the Mexican answer movie, like the Frenchy Frenchness in the French or whatever. Because again, because this French director made a movie about Mexico that's like straight out of like I said, Republican attack ads, pretty much, right? Yeah. Like, this Mexico doesn't exist. I don't even know where it is.
And in a perfect world, it wouldn't be Zoe Saldana versus Isabella Rossellini. It would be... Oh, yeah.
The Academy will be so afraid to be called transphobic, they prefer to be plain racist. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
not... I mean, in a real world... In a real world, the Best Supporting Actress nominee would be between Ariana Grande and Margaret Qualley, has she been nominated for The Substance, and not like Isabella Rossellini and Zoe Saldana, but it is what it is.
So I will say Zoe Saldana, which I freely admit I find her very attractive, but I think she's a talented actress.
Yeah.
I think she's very good in this befuddler of a movie. I think she's it, and the only thing I can say that is anything like is Brendan Fraser in The Whale, which I despise, but he's very good in it. And it was like, he's getting nominated for this, and it's for all the wrong reasons. But I think I think she's going to win it, and it is a good performance. But it's...
Well, now a lot of people are looking back on Jamie Lee Curtis's win for the for Everything Everywhere All at Once. A lot of people are pissed still. They're like, you know what? As time goes on, more and more people are mad about Jamie Lee Curtis winning that Oscar, and that should have went to like Angela Bassett. But she won a lifetime Oscar. But Angela Bassett should have won for playing Tina Turner and What's Love Got to Do with It. But
yeah, I mean, right. And I don't know. Like, there's also just like it's so and so's turn, right? Okay, sure. I mean, like,
it's Demi Moore's turn.
But Demi Moore's actually great in her role, you know, in that same way. So it's not like an Emilia Perez situation where it's like I think you indeed have to hand it to Zoe Saldana that she is working her ass off in this movie.
Yeah,
and she is not blue or green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if anything, she should have won Oscars for the Avatar movie.
Purple or blue or green.
Right, I'm blue and I'm green.
Like thinking about this a tiny bit, right? I was kind of making a joke about how Denis said it was his favorite movie of 2024. The first thing I thought of was like, you know, the scenes that I'm not even sure if I've seen the entirety of it, but like scenes that I've seen from like Sicario, right? Like it's the Sicarioization of Mexico again, but like, you know, it just for an even more facile purpose, which people in Mexico have talked about Sicario as something that's given Mexico both a negative image and like kind of a true one. And but like, it's funny that that's the Denis movie. And then he's like, oh, I love Emilia Perez, the movie that does that, but adds like, you know, a character to transition after like.
Yeah. I mean, I like Sicario, but like, I wasn't looking at it like, here's a documentary on what's happening in Mexico. It was like, no, this is like a salacious narco style thing, right?
And I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I mean,
but I could see like, look, I just become
a byword, I think, on the Mexican left, and like, you know, Mexican using the complete unknown like social justice movement kind of front, like Sicario is kind of a byword for like the kind of, because it's a good movie, I think, like the kind of propagandistic depiction of places in Mexico that they find to be unhelpful. So it's just funny for the Sicario director to be like, I love it. I love this depiction of Mexico.
I feel like Emilia Perez is helicoptering her penis into vagina too hard. There we go. That's it's going to say a lot. It's a different screen. I can't get over there fast enough.
Yes. It's crazy that Emilia Perez is the second most nominated movie of all time. Like, this is like and Gone
it's,
with the
it's
Wind.
It's crazy how that's never leaving the soundboard ever. We will have that until the end of the show. Like, it will always
Titanic?
Be
Titanic?
Whereas this one, VeggieTales is going to be now. This is the show only.
I want where's the Sicario VeggieTales version?
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, like it reminds me of, like when West Side Story was nominated for like 10 or 11 Oscars, and like Natalie Wood was not even nominated for working her ass off to play Maria, despite the fact she couldn't do her own singing.
Oh, wow, Cemetery Man, that's violent.
Yeah,
and it won like all but like one Academy Award. Like, like people did not think Rita Moreno was going to win Best Actress, and then of course, Ariana, that played Maria. I mean, that played Anita in the new West Side Story, also won for Best Supporting Actress. And I'm like, wow! If you want to win an Academy Award,
like West Side Story, I guess.
play Anita in West Side Story, you'll win an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress.
Not to give the worst people in the world, career advice, but. If you're an actress or like a star of some kind or anything like that, right, in entertainment that could possibly
delete your tweets.
Go back and like I knew, like I'm not even a person, but as soon as I started live streaming, I went back and now I don't have a Twitter, so it doesn't really matter. But like there was shit I said when I had a Twitter at like 16, and I was like, oh, I need to go back and like.
Like, don't they have services that do that too?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
like
where delete tweets. Well, a lot of them now are you have to pay for them because of fucking Elon, but like. Ridiculous.
That seems like a problem that was very easy to solve.
But
I hate that it's like that's the reason why that he's not romping to like all these wins.
Yeah, definitely not what I was tweeting about. But.
Yeah.
But whatever, you know, again, just like the cardinal that wants to redact all the gays to the prisons, you know, having a having a child with a young lady in conclave. Mm-hmm. If that's what stops Emilia Perez from winning. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Better yet, don't bet. Yeah. That's just, see, I'm just built different. That's what I do. Yeah. I just,
see, but also a lot of us have been on social media since we were like 12, 13 years old. And if people are going to be like, well, you said this when you're 13, I'm like, bitch, my frontal lobe was not fully developed when I was 13. Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm glad social media wasn't around when I was.
Yeah.
I honestly, I mean, I was not like as, I'm way radier now than I was as a kid, but like, I don't know, man. It doesn't seem like it's a good thing for everyone
to have. Yeah. When you hit 25, you're finally starting to have a fully developed brain. It's like, wow. Right.
Well,
and I wanted to say about Lucy. There was no takes I went back and deleted. There's just words that as a teenager I thought were okay to say that I don't think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's how we all feel.
Like,
you know?
No, it's
in
like,
context.
You know, yeah. It's like, but you know, everything is stripped of context online. People just dig through, and especially the thing where it's literally the point of when everyone's up against each other, right? Like people are going out of their way to, like, not even saying necessarily the people that are paid to do this, but like people are going out of their way to find dirt on you to disqualify your movie from, you know, getting any kind of you know, from winning anything. So for her to have literally like the craziest Twitter of all time, where it's just like she's like sounding off on George Floyd from fucking Spain.
why do that? Like, what does that get you? I honestly don't understand. Like,
it's she was like, one of them was like, I don't think that all cops are murderous, racist thugs, and I don't think all black people are like are you know, degenerate, you know, fucking drug addicts or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but why? Like, this is, how do you, number one, how do you know about American cops? Whether you've never been to America. Like, your Spanish cops are probably a little bit different than, you know, the American fucking, I mean, I don't know, maybe not, but like it seems like this country has a specific history of racism, which obviously Spain does too, but ours is very tangible. And it's like, maybe don't have a take on that from, you know, fucking,
but everyone wants to aspire to be like us.
The spot in Spain, like,
and if you're gonna first, yeah, don't make comments like that. But if you were to, but if you were, it has to be like this. It has to be like, hold on, here comes Glinda and her gay ass bubble. It has to be like that, because that's hilarious. I'm sorry, that's not.
Yeah,
is it appropriate? No. Is it hilarious? Goddamn right.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it is. What is it, 13? They don't get it back until 28.
Yeah, well.
At 30, I'm still struggling to get, you know. Like, but at the same time, I don't want to like fully just say like, oh, blanket amnesty for anyone who tweeted something bad a long time ago, because there are people that haven't, you know, changed their fucking.
Yeah. Oh God, no!
There's like, awful folks.
But
it's because we, a lot of people are like, why don't those people get the hate? I'm like, because we don't expect anything better from them.
Yeah.
By the way, literally like a week ago, there was the guy that got fired from the new government agency for tweeting like the intensely racist shit about Indian people, and they're like,
and he got rehired.
You got rehired, but they were like, he was just a kid. And then they looked and it was 3 weeks ago that he posted it.
Yeah. I call them the Doge twinks because that's what they are. They're 20-year-old twinks that work for Doge.
You know what? Save it for this new podcast. I'm roasted, man. Like, let's call it. We got Sing Sing on Tuesday. Mackenzie Wilkes, friend of the show, coming back. We haven't had her on since Birds of Prey. She's great. Criterion Connection, Austin Danger podcast. That and Thelma are my favorite movies of the year. It's criminal that it didn't end up in a Best Picture nomination. And then we're gearing up for our live stream. So even if you're not interested in award shows generally, we're going to be providing hours and hours of quality content and laughs with our new friend Julia and our friend Lauren, who we did not see nearly enough of tonight because he was trying to multitask.
I feel like they keep like tokenizing and not taking like a Coleman Domingo's award seriously when they come up to stuff.
And oh, he's going to his directorial debut soon too.
his.
Oh, that's right.
Movie about Kim Novak and Sammy Davis Jr.'s relationship.
Yeah, and
Sydney Sweeney.
Sydney Sweeney is Kim Novak, which great.
That, I mean, that sounds like a recipe for a good movie. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like that's one of those things that is going to click. But
yeah.
Oh yeah.
But he's so
underrated.
Freaking great, and the fact that like Brody's gonna walk away with it, which I like Brody's performance, but again, I mentioned, I think it was on the after party, the Wicked after party, right? That it mentioned, I love that his role in CO They Run because he played an insufferable actor. He was great at that.
I loved him in Euphoria.
He also, like, there's the whole like controversy. He used AI on
Adrian part. Brody's in Euphoria.
No,
I was talking about Adrian Brody. I was saying Coleman Domingo should win, but Adrian Brody is going to win, and that's
to me.
Adrian Brody was in a Succession for an episode, but
he was a villain for a whole season. Peaky Blinders. And his accent was annoying. He sounded like those gangsters.
No, I feel like it's crazy that I mean this is going to be an unresolved moment of there's going to be an unresolved tension until. I think real rules are put down in place about, you know, AI and art and like whatever in these industries, but and who knows if they ever will or if it's just going to steamroll everybody. But like, it's crazy that, you know, the unspoken part of the like using AI to do your Hungarian accent to make it good, and like there's like a huge amount of controversy around that and Adrian Brody, and it's like
nobody doing that in Conclave.
It's like the yeah.
They did Emilio Perez too.
They did.
Yes. I don't know to who. Like, everyone's talking. the guy was like, "Can you give me a better Israeli accent?"
yes.
It's just like, I don't know. I was AI or not. I was impressed by Adrian Brody's performance. But like, I don't know. That movie was a lot.
It was, yeah,
and I hate, like, my brain picks up on, because I think that movie is about art and architecture. I don't think it's about Jewish identity. I don't, like, that's not the point that I was trying to make when I said that.
No, I didn't think you were, but a lot of people were talking about that.
I know, so. But I'm saying, like, yeah. In the chat there, I don't think that wasn't my take. It's just that comes up and it's like, what is this movie saying about this portion of it, because it is a big part of it too, and it's like a lot of statements about what his Jewish identity means and what his survivor, like Holocaust survivor thing means. They could have the movie and not had him be a Holocaust survivor at all and done something, you know, had him be one of the people that fled Budapest after the Soviets, you know, have him be the last tanky or something. But like,
what's good, Letter Hack? Good to see you. Was Bradley Cooper's nose AI in Maestro? Yeah, exactly. It's category fraud. Category fraud.
Also, check out the Letter Hack's new like background for streaming. It looks really good.
There you go. So,
can't pull it up. I don't think unless you
turn this off and go look at that because I'm
done. His blue light background. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looks
cool.
Really nice. Looks like he's
I think
out of like a man cave.
I think I'm going to be on his show next week from today. Actually, talk about the new record. So,
yo, Kaya, that's actually pretty base. I wish we could do that in this country.
So there's a woman in Germany in jail for life after claiming the Holocaust didn't happen. Well, yeah, there you go.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's illegal in Germany.
Yeah, it should be illegal there. Also, best Margaret Qualley. I'm doing the lip bite.
It's gonna be a whole trend. Everyone's face is gonna be fucked up from doing it.
If you claim the Holocaust didn't happen here, the government will hire you.
Yeah, you'll suddenly be like you'll be an ambassador.
You'll be the
ambassador of Germany.
You'll be the head of the Department of Transportation because like this seems like a guy that can make the trains run on time. Mm-hmm.
So hope you all enjoyed the speed round for Nickel Boys and Complete Unknown and Brutalist and Emilia Perez.
Yes.
that's enjoyable. That worked well. And
I had anxiety in the beginning with the taking. I was like, oh man, I gotta get my thoughts together.
I wouldn't want to do it all the time, but
yes, we are doing an Oscar show. Yes,
I've mentioned like four times, haven't I? Like, I think I'm overdoing it. Like, yeah, we're doing a full Oscar stream. We do it every year,
except for that one year that we didn't do it in fucking Chris Rock got slapped, and then I was like, well, we gotta be doing this for now.
So sorry, I have memento. That's good. That's good. I'll say that next time I forget something. That's gonna steal that. Yeah, but join us. So join us first for Sing Sing on Tuesday with Mackenzie Wilkes, as mentioned, and then our live Oscar stream yearly. It's a great time. Better than watching the actual show. Many people are saying this.
Yep, us.
Especially me, right now, when I say
you call it like mementos, and it's like your memory gets like freshed every
yeah, that's good. Oh, I think the other Conan is hosting it this year, right?
Yeah, Brian is hosting.
The guy whose background says white, like literally his whole, like he did a DNA test and just said white, not Irish, not that, just white.
So it's confusing when people start calling, oh, Conan's going to be great this year. I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, okay, talking about the other one. Right. I'm not kidding. It's very confusing for me. But
anyway. I like him better than I like Jimmy Kimmel.
I like Conan O'Brien. He's good.
Speaking of Oscar winner or Oscar nominee, Cynthia Erivo is going to be hosting the Tony Awards this year. Yay! Nice. I'm excited.
Congratulations, Cynthia Erivo. And yeah, and that's got to be it, right? That's got to be it.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I do really like the. I mean, you know, I love Conan O'Brien's. You know, his shows, obviously, but like, it's pretty amazing that he was also the writer behind the monorail episode on The Simpsons. Best Simpsons episode. It's like
monorail.
Yeah, he's really got it. So I'm excited to see what jokes he comes up with at this year's.
Brian kid is going places. He should have a talk show.
I'm surprised.
All right. Good night.
I didn't have Joe Biden present one of the awards, not the Oscars, now that he's signed to CAA.
Listen, Jack.
He's like for the best picture. And then he just wanders off stage.
51st dates. It's 51st dates, Kaya.
All right. Well, I think Amelia Perez, Amelia Perez, Amelia.